Running a call center is tough. Leading a sales team is a challenge. Luckily, your hosts know what it takes to succeed. What you can expect from your two guides? Conversations that won't be overly scripted. Definitely not salesy or boring. Just filled with as much value as possible. Each week, Jason and Oliver will bring you topics to help scale your team, increase profits, and actually feel like you are winning. So, if you are ready to up your game and become the best in the business, tune in, take notes, and be prepared to learn. And here they are with another episode of Call Center Confidence. It's Jason Cutter and Oliver Katt.
What's going on, everybody? Happy Wednesday. We are now firmly into July. Oliver, what's going on? So glad that you're here. Should be fun.
Absolutely, and glad that you're here. Yeah, everything is good. It's happening. It's Wednesday. It's Call Center Confidence episode number 9, I believe. We are rocking and rolling with this. How are you doing, Jess?
I am doing good. Always glad to be here. I feel like it's been a lot over the last few weeks with traveling and internet, and it's nice to be semi-stable and here with you and moving our conversation forward. Obviously, people tuning in right now, whether you're on Facebook or YouTube or LinkedIn, please put a comment, say hello, tell us where you're from. If you have any questions from what we talked about in the first 8 episodes, or what we're going to cover today, that'd be awesome. Just put those chats in. We can see most of them as they come through, and happy to say hello and address those as we can. Our good friend Al is in the house. Al, thank you as always for tuning in each week. Appreciate you. It's always good to see you on here. How about you, Oliver? What's going on in your world? You said that we've got to end this on time this week because some very important stuff in your world is going on.
European Championship semifinals today. England are playing Denmark in 1 hour and 57 minutes. If we win this, we go through to the finals, which would be the first time in like 50 years, I think. And if we win it, it's going to be incredible. Celebrations all around. So I need to literally wrap up here, get to the golf club and watch it with the boys and the girls, because it's an interesting day. But Al, good to join us again. Thanks very much for coming on. Lots to talk about today, Jason. Picking up from where we left off. And as you say, so many questions from the last 8 episodes. I mean, I've still got notes of questions that I'm still asking myself.
Yeah, for sure. And so for this week, what we wanted to do, and if you saw the post leading up to this, then you're aware, but we wanted to continue the conversation where we left it off. So we have followed the, and Oliver and I are laughing because Al is putting in there, go Denmark, but he's just kidding. Otherwise, he's going to get
banned. Can we kick Al off?
Yes, I'm going to kick you. Sorry, Al. It's good knowing you. You can't say that kind of stuff. Go Denmark. So what we've been doing is following the progression for call centers. If you haven't seen any episodes, you can go back, find them. We're going to make those available soon on a podcast stream as well. But looking at the progression from, you know, building the team to recruiting, to onboarding, to training. And then we're just going to continue with that from here on out. So last time was the third part of our training conversation, if you will. It stretched out 3 episodes, which is amazing. So much content. Probably could have kept going. And so now we've got our people. They're in a nesting environment or they're about to hit the floor. And let's continue so that you and they can be successful, whatever your role might be. So where should we start, Oliver?
Well, you know what? I think you hit the nail on the head. Let's kind of jump into, you know, the end of training, into their nesting, grad bay, academy, graduation, whatever you want to call it. There are so many call centers out there that have their own kind of theory of what this is. But, you know, I think it's important really to talk about how it can be successful. I think it's important to say, you know, what we should be looking at, what we should be marking, putting down as a metric, as a KPI. Do those KPIs for nesters work? So many questions to ask, but I think some very valid points there. So I think in that transition, Jason, your opinion, and I know that you've been involved in, you know, in these kind of setups and how these things have kind of moved from training out of the classroom into that kind of on that floor momentum. Do you think it's important for the trainers, for example, to follow through and kind of support that that graduation bay. Let's just for the sake of delay, let's call it grad bay or nesting. Either way, otherwise I'll just talk about so many different variants. But do you think it's important for them to come out with them and support them post training, or do you think it's, you know, something they should just hand over to the operations? What do you think about that?
I think it really comes down to staffing availability and then also the training classes you do. In some organizations I've seen is they're doing back-to-back trainings. They only have so many trainers or a single trainer, and it's just not feasible to have the trainer follow the group out onto the floor and provide more nesting or provide more support. I've also had it where I've built up training programs where there's been three trainers, where I have trainer number one who's handing the week one, which is mostly classroom and some role playing. And then I have trainer number two and trainer number three that are working with each other to handle the 2 weeks of, let's call it nesting, where they're on the phone, but they're in the corner of the training environment and they're taking leads or making calls with a high ratio of adult supervision, right? Like two trainers for 8 or 10 people. And they're just on calls. They're active. They're just helping the baby birds leave the nest, if you will. And then that works really well. And then they hand them off. So it really depends on the resources available, how far that trainer is going to go with them.
Yeah, I think you're right there. I mean, as you say, I think there are so many factors that come into play when they're making that transition. I think it's difficult. I mean, don't get me wrong, if we all had availability and we all had the gift of time, every trainer would be with every grab bay, every nester from from go live all the way through until they're ready to go and kind of live and kicking. Look, I've seen the same situation. I've seen people go from back-to-back training classes, just churning and burning, unfortunately. And I hate to say that kind of falls back to what we've discussed previously when it comes to recruiting and getting the right people and putting the right bums on seats, because again, if we followed that process end to end, would we necessarily always have trainers going into back-to-back classes? Now, if we're doing a big ramp up, of course, because you don't want to put 50 people in one induction class because that's never going to work. I mean, I've seen classes that train 4 to 6 weeks that have had 25 to 30 people in. And I think, wow, you know, we're trying to train sales or we're trying to train service and all of this product information, and you've got a big class, and that's a lot of time. You know, I mean, you could easily reduce that induction length by having half the class in there. You know, it's one of those things that what's worse, you know, what's the lesser of two evils? What would you rather do? Would you rather have a shorter induction and less people so that you can go back to back, or a bigger induction with more people so you get one and done?
Again, I think that really comes down to how long it really takes to get someone up to speed, right? To competency, which is what you reference all the time. Can it be done in a couple of weeks where someone is mostly competent and then a sales manager or a team lead can take over from there? Or does that person need to be really ready and really on their own such that they're out on the floor? Because some environments I've seen, the team lead is also busy doing their own production, and they're so busy that they're kind of there to provide some guidance if necessary, but they don't have their full attention on new people. Yeah. So that new person has to be really self-sustainable. There's other times where it's a dedicated team lead or manager where that's all they have is their team's success. And in that case, you can hand them someone that's 3/4 of the way ready, and then you can, you know, move them up.
No, I see that. I see that. And I think that makes perfect sense.
And I think the biggest key, though, is in this whole discussion for people that are watching or listening, is understanding what that success metric looks like. I think we touched on it last week, which is, what does it look like when they're ready? What does graduation look like? And we have the training graduation. And if you have a nesting period, what does the nesting graduation look like? What is an indicator of success and competence? How far do they need to go? How many deals do they need to do in what time period when we're talking about salespeople? Like, if the ultimate metric, like I've seen in organizations, is 3 sales a day is what the quota is for successful sales on the floor, then how many do they need to be able to do? 1 a day, 2 a day, like consistently before they can graduate? And then you go, okay, this person has enough, then we can work with them the rest of the way.
Yeah, no, I understand that. I understand. And I think, you know, going back to what you just said about the metrics and putting them in place, I think it's important to understand, and this is for everybody, you know, listening to this, you know, nobody expects our people to sell straight out the gate. And I think that's important to remember, that they're not going to be ready. I mean, there are some people that come in with the power, with the skill, that can literally go out there, pick up the phone, and they can do that. I think you have to bear in mind, these are different people to a majority of the people that you bring through the door. Not everybody's going to sell off the bat. And I don't want to say don't hold them accountable straight away, but at the beginning, we need to be looking at pipeline. We need to be looking at deals. And again, depending on what it is, inbound, outbound, e-chat, it may be, you know, you don't really necessarily always have a big pipeline when it's inbound sales, for example, because you're waiting for the phone to ring for you. But at the same time, you've got to let people become familiar. What do they say? We learn 70% of our jobs when we're on the phone doing it. That's a big, important factor. And I've seen companies after 2 weeks go, do you know what? Yeah, Oliver's not performing. He's not eating quite. Let's get rid of him. 2 weeks. 2 weeks is not enough to embed somebody into a project. Now, don't get me wrong. We still need to be looking at our metrics that we do put in place. And whether it is, as I keep saying, like a glide path that goes up. You start down here and we go through. Again, there are things to measure. I mean, what would you measure? JC, if you were giving some tips here to some call center managers out there or some leaders out there, and I know I'm kind of putting you on the spot with this question, but what do you think are some key metrics in a, let's go with the sales environment that we can really measure in a grad-based situation that's going to give us a data set to determine whether a new agent is doing well? I elongated that question for you to give you time to think, because that was a completely like question.
Well, and that's the fun thing for anyone watching or listening to this. We prepare some topics, but we don't plan questions or anything like this. So when we ask each other questions, it's completely on the fly. And it's what you get and what you hear from this is just whatever's on our mind. So we are not... we don't plan very much out as far as like scripted specific stuff. So I love that question. And going back to your comment about like, you know, companies that give somebody 2 weeks and they let them go, is it's really important to be fair and give someone enough opportunities and chances, right, to be successful or to prove they're successful, but then also measure them relative to what that looks like. Again, if you're expecting your rep or your agent to do 3 sales a day, when they're at full speed, full competency, you have to understand when that's going to happen for most. The challenge is that trainers, managers, people like you and I, we're not normal humans that are just on the floor working in the sales thing, right? We have some extra skills. We have some extra abilities, which is why we've moved up, why we've done other things, why we help companies the way we do. And so just because we can do 3 sales a day in a week of showing up at a new company doesn't mean anybody else can. So you have to figure out what that number is. Maybe it's 3 months, maybe it's 2 months. And then for that 2-week metric, like you said, what does that look like? What should somebody be able to do? If maybe they should be doing 1 sale a day. Okay, that's great. How are they doing? Now, if they can't do that, then yeah, cut them loose. And I've worked in some environments where the tolerance is even shorter than 2 weeks, just because you just know. But I think the metrics for me and what I always look for and the KPIs that I want from a nesting group and to a on-the-floor group is not just the closed deals, but it's also the milestones in the sales process. So every sales process I've ever dealt with or managed or led or consulted with has some phases, some milestones. Even if it's a one call close, even if it's a direct to consumer sale, there's some kind of information gathering, and then there's some kind of quoting process, and then there's some kind of application process in those stages. And so what I'm looking for is somebody who is making progress and getting their calls to convert to a quote. Even if they don't close the deal, they're moving them forward, right? And then they're moving them forward. And then tomorrow they're moving more of them. Even if they don't close a deal, they're getting the conversations to last longer. They're hitting those milestones. And then we can work on whatever's getting in the way in that phase. Like, what are they missing that's not closing that last part, versus looking at it as an all or nothing phone call, right? You either closed it or you did. Yes, but like, how are you doing? How are you getting better? What do you think about that?
Yeah. No, I do. And I think a lot of that makes sense. And I think you know, there's a lot to take away from that. And I think that we need to make sure that we are recognizing these moments in this person's initial tenure as being on the phone. And when I say initial tenure, this is before they go live. They're let loose. And I think that is something to be really kind of honed in on, because that really makes a difference. And it also, you know, gives person the energy boost that they need. And, you know, jumping back to the quote line, I mean, there are so many companies that will see a quote as a win because they are giving a quote out. But then also there are so many companies that issue quotes, but in the same sentence, they say, look, I'll send you a quote. But, you know, the quote's only valid for the length of this call. It's like, well, hang on a minute. So the minute the customer takes that quote to go away and look at it, that quote is no longer valid. What's the point of giving a quote in the first place? I don't know what I thought of that. That was something recently that stuck out in my mind with a client that I was working with. I was like, so what's the point of giving them a quote? I went completely off track there. But, you know, it was something that popped out in my head. But anyway, yes. Going back to those metrics, I think let's review them. Let's discuss them. Let's kind of make it out there. So, you know, we talk about other things that we want to measure and giving a list of other grad bay metrics. I think, first of all, things like, you know, I think some people like to market, some people don't. You know, attendance, punctuality. These are two things that we look at anyway, because this is what we expect in our first initial kind of launch of this agent. This is what we want them to do for the rest of their time. You know, we want them to be on time. We want them to be punctual. For me, other key metrics, things like, again, in a sales environment, is average handling time something that all sales companies look at? I worked with a company over a few years, and average handling time, AHT, was something that they didn't even look at. It wasn't important to them as a sales company, because the founder, the CEO, the owner of the company turned around and said, look, if our customers want to spend an hour on the phone to buy our product, let them spend an hour on the phone, because you know what? They want to drill down. They want to understand. So you've got calls that are 5 minutes long and you've got calls that are 2 hours long. Do you think AHT is important in sales?
So I think that's all relative. So a lot of the sales that I've run were consumer sales. So for consumers, and they were more consultative problem solving sales, and then a longer application. So a lot of data collection in order to get the person set up with the service that they were being provided, usually regarding their debt, and getting, you know, have to go through a lot of their debt and then get them set up. And so a successful call could be 30, 45 minutes at the fastest, or it could be 2 hours. And so that's where I have always struggled with holding true to just those kind of metrics, because really what I look at is the end results. Here's how I've always judged the salespeople and their performance: is what is the goal? Okay. If the goal is 2 sales a day, did you hit 2 sales? Yes or no? If you did, how you got there doesn't matter to me. If you had 2 3-hour phone calls and that's what it took, and those people are great customers that don't cancel, then that's a win, right? It's going to be hard to sustain that long-term, but if that's what it took, then that's what it took, right? We all know when you get that older person on the phone and they just want to talk and it takes a while to get everything, that just happens. But if it works, it works. If you didn't close 2 sales, then let's go backwards. What was your talk time? Oh, you spent 45 minutes out of an 8-hour shift on the phone, average handling time. Okay, what did you do? Did you leave 45 messages, or you just didn't feel like working today? Okay, how many calls did you make? And then work backwards through those metrics to find what might have been missing. And then I'll tell you the other thing too, and this is what I found in every call center I've worked, is there's the go-to formula for success, right? This many calls or this much talk time and this many quotes is going to equal sales long-term. And then each person has their formula, right? How they operate, what they do well. And then what I've always tried to do is work backwards and figure out each rep's formula for what it takes for them to be successful. Like when they have a good day, here's what they did, and then hold them to that on an ongoing basis. When they don't have a good day, remind them, hey, your best days are when you're on the phone 4 hours a day and you're making at least 40 phone calls. That's a good day for you. That leads to success.
I think that's a you know, that is a great way and a great roadmap to success. I mean, you could look at so many different ways, comp plans, adding all of this in to make sure that, you know, that your sales are solid. A reference to something you said a minute ago is to make sure that, you know, you spend X amount of time on the phone, but you've made sure a customer doesn't leave us, doesn't cancel their product and go elsewhere. Mm-hmm. I worked with a company many years ago, one of my very first call center jobs as a sales agent, and they specifically paid us our commission 3 months later. It was a 90-day post-commission. And the good thing about that, the great thing about that was, you know, the company wanted to ensure that that customer was still with us 90 days later. And it was a retentionist job. So it was a sales job, sales environment, call center. We were retaining business and we were paid on basically saving customers. And to that end, it was like, right, okay, great. I saved Jason. Jason's not going anywhere. He is a customer for life. Thank you very much. All right, great. All right, I've done my job. I've got my sales conversion up. My average handling time is okay. But 90 days later, are they still a customer? And they would run a report with every customer that we save. And if they are still a customer, you got your commission. Yeah. And that's a great way of looking at it. I think, and I know we've got, we talk about comp plans all the time. I know that's a big thing for you. I know you love to talk about it. And I know we're going to continue to talk about comp plans as we go on in different ways to add things in. But I think that was a really good strategy. One of the last companies I worked for, their agents who were selling travel and tourism, they were paid a little bit up front for the sale, and then the rest of the commission was paid post-travel to make sure that the customer actually took the vacation. They went away. And I think these are the types of things where, you know, there are some companies I've worked with which will pay you up front, and then if the product got cancelled or the product got declined or the product got taken away, the money was then deducted from their next month's salary. It was in their contract. It was signed. For me, I would hate to see money being taken out of my next month's pay because I'd already spent it a month prior. Mm-hmm. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that one's always a tough one. I mean, I've worked with organizations where they have a clawback on the cancellations, meaning that if someone cancels within 30, 60, 90 days, they will deduct that from a commission. And then what happens too is they didn't want to let any of the reps know what their cancels were until payday, because what they didn't want to do is, let's say, first day of the new pay period, they didn't want to tell people about their cancels and then have them be upset and unhappy and mentally just blow the whole week, right? Like, I've seen that before years. And I remember my first sales management job. I mean, every day reps would come in and they'd get a phone call that somebody either was canceling or had a question. And sometimes reps, like, they could save their deals, right, and keep people going. Sometimes reps would walk into voicemails where they had cancellations and they were starting the day off in a hole. And it's like, you've got to basically pull yourself out of that hole just to be even. And mentally, that's so tough, right? Which I like what you said about 90 days waiting to get paid. I think the other thing too, and this is where I've actually done a lot of work with organizations, is also accounting for the fact that this is a sales job, meaning that you're selling people, you're persuading them, you're helping them make decisions. It's not an order taking job, right? Because, you know, I talk about that all the time, the difference between order takers and sales professionals. If you're an order taker, someone calls and says, I want to buy this, here's my money, now let's go, right? In sales, you're persuading somebody who's unsure of what to do, right? You're helping them get unstuck. You're helping them make a decision, make a change, get out of their comfort zone. When you do that, you're getting somebody to make that change, which later on they will look back and go, uh-oh, I probably shouldn't have done that. So even if you're the best of the best as a sales professional, people will cancel because you got them in the moment to make the right move. And then they talk to their Uncle Bob, who always knows everything about everything that you're trying to sell, or their spouse or their boss. And then what happens? They cancel. So what I've done is I've actually built into comp plans and performance accountability a certain measure of cancellations, because I want the reps to get the right people into programs. But I also understand human nature, that some people, they're just going to freak out the next day. And I don't want the reps to be afraid of moving the right people forward either. Hey, it's Jason Cutter of Cutter and Cat. We'll be right back to the podcast. But first, are you ready to help build up the confidence of your call center team so that they can scale and generate more revenue? In our experience, there are many factors that could be keeping your sales operation from achieving the success you want for them. The first step to creating call center confidence is to determine the gaps from where you are now to where you'd like to be. If you're ready to find out how we can help your sales operation, whether it's with training, systems, technology, outsourcing, or anything in between, email info@callcenterconfidence.com today, and we'll set up a free assessment call to find out how we might be able to help you. And now back to Oliver and I chatting about call centers.
No, I think you're right. And I think, again, building it into the comp plan is something that's important. Maybe it's not a 60-90 day payment plan, but it's a 30-day payment plan once the product can't be cancelled. And just to touch on a point that you brought up, is no one likes to dig themselves out of a hole. We hate to do that anyway. We hate to do that naturally. When we all get stuck in a hole, no matter what we're doing in our everyday life, in our money, in our support, whatever it might be, nobody likes to do it. So to do that in your job as well and to have to worry about that, especially if you've got bills to pay, nobody wants that. So effectively, what you're saying is, you've got to be a sensible person and hold on to your commission for 2 months just to make sure it's not deducted from you later down the track. It doesn't work like that. If money goes into your bank account, you want to spend it.
I think, real quick, the main thing is that the company is getting what it wants, which is a long-term customer, right? Which is your examples of the travel and those kind of things. And so a lot of times if sales isn't careful, sales only cares about what sales wants, which is deals and money today. And sometimes sales leaders forget what the company needs, which is to profit and to succeed. And so you've got to balance that. And so I think that one's important. I think it's also you have to be very careful as an organization where you make sure that people are responsible and rewarded for what they can control and nothing beyond their control. So if I'm a salesperson and I have to wait 90 days to get paid on a commission on somebody who enrolls, if they cancel 60 days in, was I able to save it or was somebody else saving it? Maybe they're not very good. Maybe they canceled because of something in the contract that was out of my control. I did my job. I did a really good job, but somebody else screwed up 60 days from now.
Yeah.
Then how do you balance that? And I've built some pretty complex rules in comp plans to account for what the rep can control, usually compliance QA related, and then what they can't control, they're not punished for, if it's something downstream. So,
yeah, and I think that's a very great point. I tell you what, I think we need to add customer retention to our lineup, because again, another topic that I'm sure we can spend many hours on discussing. But that's the thing, and I think you bring a very valid point, is salesperson A sells the product. When that customer wants to cancel, does salesperson A get that customer to call back and try and retain it, or does it go to a retention team, and where do we pay? That's a big one, and I'm sure that a lot of people out there, especially working in environments like that, would want to discuss that, because what do we do in that scenario? It's a toughie. But jumping back into the grab bag, right? Jumping back into the whole nesting piece and the metrics and everything else. In your opinion, Jason, what do you think an ideal length of a sales, and we'll talk about customer service, we'll talk about other kind of areas of businesses as well. But what do you think a decent amount of time to record, assess, and develop? And the reason why I say develop is because I think it's important to remember, and we'll come on to this in a minute, that training should still happen throughout your graduation and your nesting. Because if it doesn't, they're never going to learn. I think that's an important topic to mention, which we'll come back to. But what do you think is an ideal time frame to really make sure that somebody hits the mark?
For me, if we're talking business to consumer, right? And Al put a comment in here that B2C versus B2B, they're two different beasts. If we're talking consumer direct, some kind of consumer service or product that's being sold, 2 weeks. For me, I know within 2 weeks, especially depending on what the marketing looks like, because those sales cycles are usually shorter, as long as they have a fair number of at-bats, right? As long as they're having enough conversations, they can have enough conversations. You even said the difference between inbound versus outbound. I mean, if they're getting inbound and there's no phone calls, then that's not fair, right? Like baseball, if they're not getting any pitches that they can hit, then it's not fair to judge them on what they hit or did not hit, right? B2B is obviously different. Then you have to really know. I mean, and that might be a month, 2 months before you really understand if somebody's got it. In business to consumer, especially if we're talking nesting, 2 weeks after training, yeah. After classroom, on the phones, engaged in conversations, I know within 2 weeks.
Okay, so I want to use Al's question that just popped up on the screen there. It says, how many different products and services are we looking at? Now, Al, I hope I'm addressing your question the right way. And putting this into your answer about a couple of weeks there, Jason, you know, somebody versus selling one, say, SaaS product versus somebody who is selling one product that has 15 variations with 20 sub products. Do you think it's the same? Because we're still receiving inbound calls. We're still trying to sell one product that fits our customers' needs. I mean, look, before you answer, I'm going to jump on the same bandwagon. I think 2 weeks is an ideal, maybe three at a stretch if you add a few more products in there. But again, you know, it's always one product with variations, in my opinion, because then that way would you not have separate departments to sell your different variations of product? I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I think whenever possible.
Have I frozen
one?
Again?
No, it might be me this time. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you. Did you get all my questions?
Yes, I got your question. So in my experience, whenever possible, I think one salesperson should sell one product. And that's really the most. You could put that maybe a couple, but I have found that if you add multiple product options to a salesperson, or different ways they want to go, or even upsells, then it gets significantly more difficult to grow a team at scale that can handle that and find people who are capable of making decisions and selling product A versus product B versus product C or options, unless it's like a catalog thing. Unless it's like, okay, we've got this one product, but here's all the catalog of options, and you're calling in, and then we're going to help you pick from the catalog. That's one thing. But if you're doing a consultative sale where you're trying to determine the problem someone has and the best solution, I have found it very rare at scale to be able to fill a call center full of people who can then determine the best option, especially because as a company, you have to be really careful because a lot of times the incentive plans will be focused on one product or another or on the highest dollar amounts. And then the people are just going to go for that one anyway.
Mm-hmm. Okay. No, I see your point. All right. Look, Al's just dropped up another question here. And look, 25 sub products, it's not insane. I think it depends on the industry that you're working in. I mean, for example, you could be working in a telco that sells phone, broadband, maybe even they're a commodities broker and they push in their energy, water, card processing, you know, and they're selling to small B2Bs. You've got six products in there where these are big products. So at that point, because they're so diverse, you'd probably have a telco team, a card mm-hmm. processing team, an energy team, and then, you know, the routing would take effect. Okay. But let's say, for example, you work for a hotel company, all right, and you work for let's say you work for one big chain of hotels, right? Now you're an inbound salesperson. You've got 20 hotels with different room categories, with different options, with different breakdowns. There's hundreds of thousands of variations of the products you can sell. I mean, like, there are so many ways you can look at this, but again, it's the same thing. But I think this is important to address, that this is where knowledge bases, learning management systems, product solutions, web pages, they all come into play, because effectively in an inbound scenario, outbound scenario, whatever it might be, most people already be aware of your product. You just have to find a solution of what to sell to what customer and how. Am I wrong? Am I right? What do you think?
I think that's a great example. And in my mind, I see that as one product. It's one product, which is an overnight stay at a property. Now, what it looks like, where, and then, you know, those are the colors and choices and options underneath it. But I see it as one product. Where I think companies can get confusing is, okay, so you call in, I have hotels, I have airplanes, I have boats, I have this, I have that, I have all these things. Do you want a car? Do you want this? Like, and then you start adding in all these other things that are maybe complementary, or it's option A or option B. But I think what you described is when it's done right in the system, then it's easy. Okay, I'm calling in. Essentially, I want the product, which is a place to stay. Okay, where? What does that look like? And then just moving through it and then finding that. But keeping people focused on that one product as much as they can handle it. I mean, I think that's how to get success at scale. I mean, you can always add in more. But again, can you fill a room, fill a building with people? So...
And that's the thing. I mean, there's so many, again, factors to look into. And this is where it all boils down to. Do you have a big class that goes through to Grab Bay where you're teaching all of these different products and services? Or do you have a small class and get through it as quickly as efficiently and boil background and put more people in? In that scenario, from my perspective, I know I would probably rather have multiple training classes running with a smaller group. Because that way you keep the smaller group's attention span, you keep their focus. If there's any system issues or anything like that, you can address it quickly because it's a small group. And then ultimately as well, not to mention when you put your next group out in listing, you've also got a group of people that may already have been out on the floor for a couple of weeks, maybe a month, that can also assist and help or sit next to your new GrabBay team. So you've got more resources. It's how you utilize the people that are around you and there. Another big thing I really want to talk about, and I know, you know, we're still kind of touching very much on this nesting piece. What's your thoughts on, you know, TVs with live stats or whiteboards with marking up the quotes, marking up the sales, you know, generating that buzz, generating that hype? I mean, look, I don't know what it's been like for you. I am now on a 50-50 split. And the reason why I say this, I remember when I first started out in call centers, everything was all about the clackers being spun, the, you know, the horns going off when sales were made, when you know, upgrades were done or whatever it was. Anytime that person made money or had a celebration in GrabBay, it was a celebration. I would say 50-50 of the companies that I have worked with over the last 2 years, I've either seen that or nothing. What's been your experience? What do you think?
So I'm looking at this as a lens of somebody who doesn't necessarily celebrate a lot of the things that I accomplish. So I'm not very big on celebrating, you know, closing deals or doing things. You know, it's just not my default nature. But I think that's very important for a group, especially when they're new. But I think sales floors in general, you've got to have that gamification, the excitement, the tracking. I think really what it boils down to is trying to play a game, trying to play a sport. You talked about it. You got the big, you know, football, soccer here in the States match coming up shortly after we're done here, right? Imagine they played that without any scoreboard or out any stats. They just played it for 90 minutes. And then at the end of the 90 minutes, everyone looks up and goes, huh, okay, yeah, I guess we did okay. I have no idea what happened during the game, right? And so I think, you know, to have a training class, a nesting period where people are actively on the phone closing deals or trying to, having a sales floor, call center, an environment like that, without those things, I think it's really tough to know how you're doing. And then essentially what you're doing is you're expecting or hoping that each individual is keeping their own score and that they're excited by keeping their own score. And I think that's just truly challenging. I think one of the biggest things that I've done in that nesting period is not only have the whiteboard, but you mentioned it too, is the quote sent or, you know, the phases that I talked about, the milestones, whatever that looks like for it. It could be giving a demo. It could be, you know, sending the application or sending the proposal. Having those things marked where we know, like, how are you doing? How many of those have you gotten? And what are those numbers? I think the bell or the gong and that kind of stuff is so important because people get excited. They like it. They like the energy. Here's one interesting thing that happens every single training class or every time somebody's going out on the floor. They're like, I don't want to ring the bell because, you know, the clients are going to hear that in the background. I don't like when the bell is rung because people hear that and they think that, you know, I'm just here to make money. And the biggest thing I've told them as the way to handle that is if any client mentions that, say, hey, what was that bell going on in the background, is saying, hey, somebody just helped somebody enroll or sign up. And for us, with what we deal with, a lot of times it's challenging and we love helping people. And so, yeah, somebody just closed it. That's why we clap. Like a lot of call centers, like somebody rings a bell, everyone better be clapping, even if they're on a call. And again, it's nothing to be like, this isn't boiler room, right? Unless you're ripping people off and you're taking advantage of them, you should be celebrating the customers you're helping. And I think that's the difference between enrolling and helping and sales as a service versus selling and the dirty business that people hate regarding sales. What do you think on the whiteboard bell ringing debate?
Touching on so many points that you brought up there, which I just love everything about what you just said. Look, first of all, yes, we are not boiler room. We are not Wolf of Wall Street. Sales is not like that. I mean, don't get me wrong. There are still companies that are very much like that. There are still companies that see it that way because that's sometimes the way that we have to drive salespeople, right? But anybody who's selling a product officially now, as you said, they're not ripping people off. They're not scamming people. The sale is – right, okay. When I sell my services to a client, a call center, a prospect, we call them a prospect, okay? People don't like to be called prospects because that seems like, you know, I'm scamming somebody out of it. No, but that's what we call them. They're a lead because effectively we are chasing down a lead for a possible sale. When I sell my services at day rate or package rate or whatever, I sit back there, I get an email and I go, get in. You know, it's a little bit, it's like a goal going in the back of a net. Come on, England. Thanks, Rich. Just seeing your comment. Yes, the football is coming home tonight, 100%. Or today, if you're on the eastern side of the globe. But I do celebrate. Whenever I get somebody come back to me or sign the proposal and the proposals come back to me and they've gone, great, let's lock it in. I pick up the phone to the wife or whatever. I send her a text and go, get in. Because do you know what? That's me succeeding in then what I now have to deliver. Now, the fact is, my job isn't sales. My job is training people to make sales, training leaders, training people to be better in call centers. But I have to sell my services in order to do that, all right? So, yes, I can sell because, you know, I don't just want to train people to sell and not be able to sell myself because that doesn't work. I have to be able to sell my product. The same way when you go for a job interview, you sell. How many people have, you know, guys, anybody out there listening, watching, come out of a job interview or have been offered the job and you walk out and you get in, I got the job, all right? Because that is a successful moment that you want to celebrate. When something happens to you in your life, you want to celebrate. And that's the same thing. Now, don't get me wrong, there are people out there that do want to rip you off when they're trying to, you know, say the silver bullet, get quick rich schemes where it's like, you know, sign up now for a dollar and earn $300 a day for the next 3,000 days. It's not going to work. All right. These are the things that are definitely scams. But if you're buying a product, if you're buying a software system, I know for a fact that some people that I've bought stuff off in the past, when I've sent their proposal back, signed from my point, I bet they've celebrated. Rich, recognition of performance by management to agents, experience or grab bay is a key metric to motivation. 100%, Rich. 100%. Well, I mean, I couldn't have said it better myself.
No, and I think the one other thing that I've seen from time to time is generally someone outside of sales, generally someone from HR, where they don't think it's appropriate to have everyone's stats up, right, on the TV or posted metrics, because I think generally they're worried about people's feelings get hurt if they're not doing well. And again, that's like playing a sport where you don't want to put the stats up or the score because you don't want to hurt anyone's feelings, right? And maybe when people are kids playing sports and they're just learning the game, you know, you want to leave the scoreboard and the stats out of it. At some point, it is a game that you're either winning or not. It's business. People need to be winning if they're going to be staying as part of the organization. And so don't hold back on putting stats up. But I do like what Rich said too, which is don't overdo it. He said another comment. So keep it to what matters most to the customers and the agents, which are, what are those key stats? What are super important? What's in the moment? How do you know if you're winning? And then I think too, just as a side note here, is obviously we're talking about the in-office experience in a center, in some kind of environment where everyone's close by. There's the whiteboard, there's the TV, whatever that looks like. Obviously, if it's remote or it's hybrid, you have to think about things differently, because what I see a lot of organizations missed that when they all went remote during the pandemic, where they just lost that. They lost that energy. They lost that sharing. They lost that gamification and celebration, other than maybe some chats. And so there's also, and if anyone wants any recommendations, they can email me or reach out to me. There's some great cloud-based gamification platforms that will tie into your phone or your CRM. And anytime someone closes a deal, it will actually do it. And I use that with a B2B client of mine once, where each rep had their own victory song that they picked that would then play on the TVs or in people's computers, wherever they were. Like every time they closed a deal, it would play a video and their song that they picked and pop up a little trophy icon. And then that way you just celebrate it, right? Because again, this is what we've talked about before, but sales is tough. If you're amazing at sales, you're probably failing 60, 70% of the time just to win 20, 30, 40% of the time, which is amazing. You are Hall of Fame sales if you're winning 30% of the time, which means you're losing 70% of the time. And so you've got to be celebrating every time you're succeeding.
Yeah, no, 100%. I agree. And I think I kind of laughed and I cringed at moments with that. And there were so many things that I really wanted to talk to you about. Like, I just wanted to jump in when you were talking about, you know, people just getting celebrated for doing their job and things like that. I'm like, you talk about being kids and at school. And I think I've seen this video, and I want to say it was like Simon Sinek or someone like that. And a lot of people talk about it, about these participation medals, right? Mm-hmm. As a kid, yeah, you get participation medals. But as far as I'm concerned, you're only winning when you're winning. You know, second place is the first loser. And, you know, he talks about kids these days. And I'm going back to a video that I watched a long time ago of his. And I'm sure those of you listening, were, you know, if you haven't watched it, go and watch it. And he talks about all of these different factors about how, you know, kids are growing up wrong because they're being told they get a medal for participating. So when they want to do something, they expect to get it. We're setting them up to fail. It's the same with sales reps, you know. If you're not doing your job, if you're not hitting your metrics and you're not hitting your KPIs, and I hate to be the bearer of bad news for this, but you are going to get spoken to. You are going to get pulled up because people have a business to run. If I am running a business where I'm a manager and my team are not performing, my managers are looking at me going, well, why is Oliver's team not performing? They're not going to go, oh, Oliver's team are not performing. Don't worry. I'm sure they'll get better. I'm sure, you know, we're hemorrhaging money as a business. Yeah, I'll be all right. It's not going to be all right. Companies want to see deliverables. You're in a sales role. It's that risk versus reward. You go into a CX position because you might just want to talk to people. That's what you love doing. And there are people out there that do just love to talk to people and help people after care, after service, things like that. And you know what? Great. If that's you, then there are so many call center jobs out there that are crying out for people that are good to be there from a customer experience point of view. If you are in sales and you want to earn more money, yes, you are going to get a lower base salary. However, the risk versus reward is much higher depending on the company. And that's one of the things. And I think for me, if you want to be in sales and you want to earn money, then if you want to take that leap, it's on you. But the thing is, like I say, you will walk away with so much benefit, so much experience, and you will learn so much so quickly. I don't know what your thoughts are.
Yeah, well, and Al put a comment in there that said, if a player is having a bad day, the team would rally around their teammate and help raise morale to a certain extent, right? Because if we look at a player on a sports team, hey, we all need to, you're not doing well, you need to step up. At some point, if they're still not stepping up and they're having a bad day, they're going to get benched. And if they have too many bad days, they're going to get cut. Right? That's just how it goes in professional sports. And sales is very similar to that, right? It's like everyone's going to rally. Everyone's going to push, hopefully, and support people in winning. But at some point, if that salesperson isn't winning in the day, they're going to get benched, meaning no more new leads for you. Like, you better figure this out, but I'm not going to give you any of these. Or they have enough bad days and they're going to get a performance improvement plan, which is a topic we'll talk about at some point here. And then, you know, if not, then they're going to get cut. And it's just the game that's played. It's performance. They need to perform at a certain level. And I think that's super important. And I think it's, you know, good to celebrate when you can and not make it all negative, right? Which is the performance improvement plan or meetings with HR or meetings with managers. So you've got to have that balance. For sure.
Absolutely. But again, I think another topic, Jason, that we could talk about for hours. It's one of those things. And I think, you know, when it comes to the support, when it comes to the push, when it comes to the drive, there are so much managers can do out there. And in nesting and grab bay, you have to get it right. You have to make sure that you deliver for your team that are just coming into that grab bay, because they need your support. They need you there. And also, one of the things that I don't think we've really kind of gone into the detail about is when you are putting new hires into your nesting, into your grad bay, you've got to put in a manager in there that is tolerant, that knows everything inside out, and is willing to help people to grow and to learn. And I know we touched upon development. I think this is something we're probably going to have to come back to next week, because England are playing in 1 hour and 7 minutes. I'm going to keep going on about this. And hopefully...
Is this not the week to make it a two-hour episode?
No, not it's not a Brucey bonus episode today, I'll tell you. But when we listen back to this podcast, this exact one in 1 year's time or 2 years' time, and we're listening to the fact that England are going through to the semis, and then effectively, when I come back next Wednesday, I'm going to tell you that on Sunday, they won the final. It's going to be a completely different episode. But guys, going back to your manager, make sure that you put somebody in there that is willing to help, learn, develop, and teach those people coming out onto the floor. They need to be a great expectation setter. They need to be somebody there who is willing to listen and support these people. Because if it's their first job in a call center or a contact center of any way, shape, or form, you very quickly are their first line manager and can very quickly turn them on or turn them off in terms of, are they doing the right job? And this is where we start to lose people. If we haven't already lost them in training, we can start to lose them right now. And that is not the place to be. You do not want to be that manager at all, period.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, you got to have that patient person who knows it all and understands, you know, how to get somebody to close the sales and move them forward. I think that's super important. What do you think about this real quick? We'll make this almost a speed round topic. So Al threw this out here. It's always fun with when the training class outsells the senior operations team, the senior operators, the senior people on the team. I've done that where I've actually done competitions where I have the nesting training group that's, you know, in the grad bay versus other teams. Have you seen that before, where the training nesting team outsells everybody else as a group? And if so, why do you think that happens?
Do you know what? There's a lot of ways to look at that question and interpret that question. When I saw it a minute ago, I didn't know whether Al was talking about like operational managers and things like that. Because I used to do like the manager takeover. You know, if you sell X amount within Grab Bay, the manager takes your spot on the phones and you get to sit in the hot seat for a little while. But jumping back to now how you've read it to me, which makes a lot more sense in my head. Yeah, it is a lot of fun, because all of a sudden you then start to drive performance and maybe give, pardon my language, but you give your existing team a kick up the ass to really kind of start driving. Go, hey guys, look, your newbies are just coming out the floor. You've been here for 6 months. They've been here for 6 hours. They're outselling you. So what are you doing? And it sometimes, you know, it can drive performance for your team because all of a sudden they think, well, hang on a minute, is my job at risk? Because, you know, the new people that are coming out are actually going to do better than I am. But also at the same time, I think it creates healthy, fun competition. And that's one of the things that is something that I love to talk about, and we'll probably have to roll over to next week. But I, again, remember going back to my very first call center job, my partner who was sat next to me, my buddy, as we like to call each other, because we had, like, everybody was in pairs. It was great because you'd run competitions between each other throughout the day and have a bit of banter and everything else. Luke, if you ever listen or you ever watch this, Luke Martel, good friend of mine, still to this day, I remember sitting next to him in our sales team, and all day, every day, we would have banter. We would create competition. We would create an environment where we would want to outsell each other all day long, every day. And I think that's the same with the old people and the new people that come through. And I think that's a really important thing to talk about. And I think that's something that a lot of call centers should use if they have the ability to do that.
Yep. Awesome. All right. Well, that's it for episode 9. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Al, take care. And definitely good luck, England. I know Oliver's got to go. And it's been awesome. Thanks again for joining, Oliver. Anything else going on? Anything in prep that people should be aware of for next week between now and then?
Just to give you a heads up and an FYI, that hopefully, fingers crossed, the website, if not live next week, will be live the week after. We're going to be running signups, guys, just so that we've got access to you guys, so that you get notifications of when we are going live, because eventually we're going to be migrating this live service to the website and broadcasting directly from the website, so that you'll get notifications with a link, and every single day or every single week you'll get a link to your email address. So I'll share that with you all next week, so that you can kind of get that information and keep up to date with both of us. I think that's the main thing right now.
Yeah, that's a great one. And until then, until we have that organized, which hopefully in the next week or two, you can always email Oliver@thecatalyst.com, which is 2 T's, catalyst.com, or myself, Jason@cutterconsultinggroup.com. As always, we're here Wednesdays, 1 p.m. Eastern, and then whatever your time zone is. Go England. Oliver, thanks for joining. Thanks for everyone for tuning in. We will have this as a podcast replay, so you might be listening to this in the future as a podcast. So welcome. You can always reach us. What were you going to say, Oliver?
I was just going to say very quickly, Rich's question, any plans of getting the podcast going? Yes, that will be live when the website is live. So either next week or the week after, and all episodes will be on there. We're just working on the visuals and the artwork for it at the moment.
We're trying to take this this live show kind of spur of the moment thing and make it legit and look nice and be professional for two call center dudes who are not, well, you're a graphic designer, way better than me. But yeah, I've got some technical skills. But yes, that is coming soon. Podcast, hopefully in the next couple of weeks, we'll get that launched and live. You can find all the replays audio wise. That's it for this Call Center Confidence with Cutter and Kat. Thank you, Oliver, and appreciate you. This has been a blast. And we will see everybody next week to celebrate England and their big victory. Until then, have a great one, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks so much for tuning into this episode of the Call Center Confidence Show with Cutter and Kat. If you're enjoying the show, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. We really appreciate that effort. For more info about the show, you can always go to www.callcenterconfidence.com. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll catch you in the next episode.